Welcome to this week's message from A New Church. For more information, or if you'd like to contact us, please visit our website, newchurch.nz. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy this message.
What is a trailblazer, which is the title of my message? A trailblazer is someone who makes a new track through wild country. I love that. Someone who makes a new track through wild country. It also is the first person to do something or go somewhere who shows that it is possible for other people. Like Edmund Hillary, for example. He was a true pioneer. Everyone thought it was impossible to get to the highest mountain peak, Mount Everest, and he did it. And look at how many people have actually done it since he paved the way. He was a pioneer. So that's someone who goes before, not just for himself, not just to be an adventurer, but someone who paves the way for future generations to follow. And another definition of a trailblazer is a pioneer in any field of endeavor. So a trailblazer, and in my mind, it's like someone who's gone to a place for the first time. There's been no man presence or no human presence ever before, and they are like one of those machetes like Indiana Jones, and they're cutting away a trail because there's no trail that has existed before. But they don't do it for themselves. They always do it for those that will follow. They always do it for future generations. A pioneer or a trailblazer is not an adventurer. And speaking about Indiana Jones, an incredible mentor of mine, in his words, he says that being an adventurer is all about fortune and glory. It's all about for the person. Being a pioneer, being a trailblazer is not someone who's just got, is it a wanderlust? Someone who likes to go and wander around? Is that right? You guys know what I mean. There's people that just want to take off and they want to see the big world and they want to have all these adventures, but it's really about only themselves. That is not the heart of a pioneer or a trailblazer. The heart of a pioneer is to go where no one has gone before and to pave the way for others to follow, to create a track where others can go and they can proceed and journey after them. That's the heart of a pioneer. Another definition of a pioneer: one who ventures into unknown territory to settle, thus opening it for development by others. So that's what a pioneer is. And you're thinking, what does this have to do anything about the Bible or God or church? We'll get to that later on, but I'm just sort of paving the way for you guys this morning, being a pioneer in my own sermon. So that's what a pioneer is. And if you can just remember this: pioneers blaze a trail. Pioneers create a trail. They are the first to go where people haven't gone before. I don't know if you've anyone watched that series on Netflix called Mars. One person, me. Two. Ah, Johan, awesome. Trust him because he's like me. But yeah, this series is about half of its documentary about now present day, about what it would take to go to Mars, and then the other part of it sort of speculative fiction about these people that actually go to Mars, pioneers for the first time. And as I'm thinking about that, it's like the people that went to the moon for the first time, it could never be done, but they did it, and then others followed. And it's this whole thing about the pioneer spirit. There's something about that we absolutely need back in our churches. So characteristics of a pioneer: faith-filled, risk-takers, vision casters, all or nothing, enthusiastic, passionate. They're going to do it or they're going to not do it, but they're going to die trying to do it. That's the heart of a pioneer. Settlers: someone who establishes himself in a new region and expands the territory. So the pioneer is someone who blazes the trail. And I don't really like this word settler, because you start to think, well, someone who settles down. It's never really about that. The heart of a settler is someone who follows the pioneer, but they, instead of blazing the trail, they widen the trail. They expand the trail. They settle and they create a community, not for themselves. It's never about themselves. It's about future generations. So the ones that follow after the pioneers are called the settlers, although, again, I don't think it's a good term. Another better term is expanders, engagers in the community. Pioneers blaze the trail. Settlers widen the trail. And we need those, someone with that settler-type spirit in our churches. So settlers establish a community where pioneers have blazed a trail, never for themselves alone, but for future generation. So my great-great-grandfather, Richard George Drake, migrated to New Zealand in the late 1800s. I sort of think he's the pioneer of our family coming to New Zealand. And then my great-grandfather, William Francis Drake, I found this in, I think it was like a story about Pūrua, and it's just north of Whangarei, and it just blew my mind that these people with the heart of, we call them settlers, but they are such hard workers, never for themselves, for future generations. I'm just going to read this for what it is. 1902, on the 28th of January, the eldest son, William Francis Drake, married Avis Langridge from Ruatangata. Yeah, that's another story for another time, but we won't get into that today. Family secrets coming up there. And in 1904, took up a section of land in Pūrua. Both William and Avis, with the help of their children over the following years, cleared the land. And all around Northland, you see these incredible stone walls. And they never really had machinery back in those days. They did that all by hand. So just imagine the incredible pioneering heart that these people had. They made all these, they just cleared the land. So to help supplement their income, so I was working on the farm that he was leasing, clearing it. William worked on various farms in the area and for the public works clearing out the Wairua River. So as well as being a farmer, he was working on other farms and also helping public works clearing rivers. These guys, man, they were such hard workers. Put some of us to shame. William suffered a serious back injury and had to go back to farming. I worked on a farm for about 6 months and I was like, man, it's the hardest physical work I have ever done. So my great-grandfather has an incredibly bad back injury, then goes back to farming because it's easy work. It's like, how these guys are amazing. After raising 9 children and the loss of his wife Avis in 1928, William freeholded the land. He went on to farm the land for another 18 years. It's the heart of a true settler, hardworking, industrious, sacrificial, community-minded, multi-generational. It is always multi-generational. The hard work that they put in is never just for themselves, it's for future generations. They are team players. So we have pioneers that go and blaze a trail. Usually the next generation or the ones to follow are called settlers, and they haven't blazed the trail. Maybe they've been born in the area where their pioneers first established, but they are the ones that are hardworking. They are expanding the trail. And so unfortunately, the next generation that comes along, the pioneer, the settler, is called the consumer. And this happens throughout history. It's just replayed itself through thousands of years. We see it in our culture today. You see it in families. You see it in all different cultures and societies. The consumer comes along. A definition, one that consumes. One that acquires goods or services for direct use rather than use and reproduction. So pioneers blaze the trail. They create the trail, not for themselves, but for future generations. They go where no one's gone before to establish something. The settlers come and they expand. They mark out territory. They expand the horizons. They do it for their families. And then usually the next generation or generations that follow are called consumers. They don't blaze the trail. They don't widen the trail. They just use and abuse the trail. And like I said, we see this right throughout history. And let's just have a look at Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because we see this whole progression from pioneer to settler to consumer in the life of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So Abraham, he's like the absolute classic pioneer, the trailblazer. Genesis 14, 1-4. The Lord had said to Abraham, "Leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I will bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you." So Abraham departed as the Lord instructed. God said, go. And he was like an incredible pioneer. He went. They went to the Canaan, which was to be the promised land, and he started establishing his family for the future generations there. So Abraham was like the classic pioneer. Then we have his son, which is the next generation, and his name is Isaac, and he's born into that land. He never had to blaze a trail. He was born after Abraham had settled there and was expanding in Canaan. So he was a classic example of someone who was a settler with a settler spirit, an expanding spirit. So Isaac built on and expanded what his father Abraham had established. And we see this in Genesis 26, 12. When Isaac planted his crops that year, he harvested 100 times more grain than he planted, for the Lord blessed him. He became a very rich man, and his wealth continued to grow. So Abraham, the pioneer, blazed the trail to Canaan. And then Isaac, who was the next generation, expanded on what his father had established. He was the classic settler, although I don't like that term settler, I prefer the term expander. Then the next generation comes, and we see that is Jacob. And Jacob's name is ambitious deceiver. He's born into wealth, he's born into affluence, he's born into privilege because of what his forefathers, his father and his grandfather, had toiled to establish. So he didn't know what hard work was really like. He was born into it. And his name literally means ambitious deceiver. And he's the classic definition of someone who was a consumer. It was all about what he could take, what he could get. He was the center of his own life. And we see this when he tries to rip his brother off, Esau, out of the inheritance blessing that was rightfully Esau's. So he goes and tricks his brother out of that, and then his brother wants to kill him, and then he goes and deceives his very own father out of the birthright blessing. Why? Because he just wanted to take. He just wanted to receive. He just wanted to use and abuse. He was a consumer, that generation that came after the pioneers and the settlers. Really, really sad. And we see this again played out in the life of the Israelites as a nation. After they had spent 40 years in the desert, then they come to the promised land, and they are about to enter the promised land. Now, Moses can't enter the promised land, but Moses wants to give them his last speech, all the wisdom he can muster to tell them, this is how you're going to live, this is how you need to live in the promised land. This is what he says. This is Moses before he dies in Deuteronomy 18-14. When you have eaten your fill, be sure to praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. But that is the time to be careful. Beware that in your plenty you do not forget the Lord your God and disobey his commands, regulations, and decrees that I'm giving you today. For when you have become full and prosperous and have built fine homes to live in, and when your flocks and herds have become very large and your silver and gold have multiplied along with everything else, be careful. Do not become proud at that time and forget the Lord your God who rescued you from slavery in the land of Egypt. Why did he say that? Because Moses knew the heart of man. Moses knew that Joshua and that generation, they were just rearing to go. They'd been waiting for a long time to enter the promised land. There was going to be a lot of pioneering. There was going to be a lot of expanding. But God was going to bless them. And once that generation had fought for the land and it established in the land, and then there would be a time where the next generation would grow up and all they would know is wealth and blessing and prosperity. And those three things, wealth, blessing, prosperity, we know that we don't have to rely on the Lord that much if we take that for granted. And it's so easy to fall away from the Lord. And Moses could see that this was going to happen. So he was warning them. So Joshua goes into the land. They fought for about 7 years. Interesting number. So that whole generation, 7 years of warfare, of pioneering, of hard work, of battle, of pain to get into that promised land, 7 years. And then it's interesting that about 7 years after that, so for another 7 years, they were expanding and they were settling and they were finding out the different tribes and where they fitted in the promised land, another 7 years. So it's interesting, pioneer, settler, we see this in the life of the Israelites entering into the promised land. Then what happened to the next generation, the ones that were born after those times, after the battle, after the hard work, after the sweat, after the expanding? What happened? Judges 2, verse 8 onwards. Joshua, son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. After that generation died, another generation grew up who did not acknowledge the Lord or remember the mighty things he had done for Israel. The Israelites did evil in the Lord's sight and served the images of Baal. such a sad story, that they took for granted what their fathers and grandfathers, I guess, hypothetically speaking, had done for them. The pioneers and the settlers, they were born into this time where had it all been done for them, they took it so much for granted. And because of the blessing that God had given them, the great challenge of that was it was so easy to fall away from the Lord, and a whole generation did. So sad. It's a bit of a sad sermon so far, isn't it? Pioneers, settlers, consumers. How does this relate to us today? I want to talk about something that is becoming quite well known in the psychology sphere called the motivational triad. So I don't go and read a lot of psychology for fun. It's not like, oh, I just want to read some of that. But I do love reading different articles, and this has fascinated me. They call it the motivational triad, these psychologists. It's a very secular term. And what they reckon is this is what they've discovered motivates us as human beings. It causes our brains to think the way it does. It causes our heart to be motivated towards things. They reckon it's been a progression of our evolution over millions of years, which we know is not true at all. But they do think that this carries a lot of weight and reality with it. This thing called the motivational triad. Three things that motivates the human heart to do what we do. Three things. Firstly, to seek pleasure. So they reckon that this is wired into our brains and in our hearts, that humans, this is the first thing in this triad, which is like a triangle, three things, is to seek pleasure. Secondly, to avoid pain. And thirdly, to do everything with the least amount of effort. And this is becoming well known, and everyone's saying, well, this is what motivates the heart of mankind, these three things. We want to seek out pleasure. We want to do everything we can to avoid pain. And you can see people running away from relational conflict. So seeking pleasure, whether it be in food or sex or drugs or entertainment, we just motivated towards that, motivated to avoid pain at all costs, pain, and to do everything with the least amount of effort. And this thing is growing in popularity in psychology fields. I just think it's another word for consumerism and the consumer heart myself. Or rightfully a better definition of the fallen heart of man, our sinful nature without God. And this is what's motivating us, they reckon, these days. But you think about kingdom culture and what God does in our hearts, it's completely counter that motivational triad, completely. So that motivational triad, or the consumer heart of us, or our sinful nature to seek pleasure, but we know with God, we want to seek God's pleasure. It's completely opposite. So no longer are we driven to seek pleasure, but we want to seek the pleasure of God. We want to please God. And instead of avoiding pain, we know that God does something in our hearts. We want to do the right thing, even if it is painful. Even if it is painful. So the fallen heart, this motivational triad, will run away from relational conflict. But we know as Christians that that's really not an option, because we got to forgive those that offend us. And if there's, you know, we got to work this out. So doing the right thing, even if it is painful. And that third one, to do everything with the least amount of effort. In God's kingdom, it's to do everything with a spirit of excellence. To go the extra mile. Over and above. So I think this motivational triad really speaks to what is happening in Western culture today. I reckon we are worshipping consumerism. And I don't think there is any part of it in the kingdom of heaven. So it's a huge, challenging word this morning. And it is very, very sad when this... And again, like how Jacob was born into it, those my age, I guess, and younger, we've been born into great times of blessing and prosperity and wealth, even in the church. We can take it so easily for granted. And what is so sad is if we take that consumer mentality that the world is carrying right now and actually carry that into the church and think that's how the church should run, which we know it shouldn't. It is so easy to bring the consumer mentality of the world into church. What is in it for me? It is so easy to join a church and completely take for granted what the previous generation sacrificed and achieved for our benefit. It is so easy to expect that the church meets our needs without any thought of giving and contributing to the work. And again, I'm not pointing the finger or blame. It's just a sign of the times that we need. So it's a challenge for us to combat this because it is absolutely rife within our culture. Never before, you think about it, that the streaming programs and movies and televisions, how we can watch tens of thousands, completely at our fingertips, a Netflix subscription and a Disney Plus subscription is way cheaper, which is great, but it's just, whoever imagined that that could happen in my lifetime? We were talking about it last night. It's incredible. We're living in a society now that we worship entertainment, and it's all about what's in it for us. Spotify, who thought that you could pay a few dollars a month and tens of millions, I guess, of songs there? Like in the old days, you listen to a song, listen to a CD, and it cost you like $30. But nowadays, it's like, it's just incredible. Thinking about church history when I grew up with what worship music was like, and most of it was terrible. But I thought when I was growing up, well, we'll never ever be able to have as good a music as the world can, so let's just put up with this. And it's not about the music anyway, it's about our heart towards God. And that was just in my lifetime. And then you see the progression of how Christian music has become so good now, and I believe better in many cases than the world. And yet, what is our heart doing? Are we still coming with, I love you, God? Or we're becoming critical of what worship's like in our church services. Oh, I'm not going to worship today. It's just like, no, it's not my style. It's not my taste. What about our church buildings? If ever you have gone to a church service and you've got to go early to start, like way early, to set up the chairs, and there's no sound dampening and it's all just like wooden floor because it's like a basketball court or something, and then you have to stay and pack down, and that's what church was like. It didn't give a thought to what sound was like. It was just, this is what you did because you're part of a church community. Now we have incredible auditoriums that are purpose-built, like this one, to put on incredible productions. And do we take it for granted? Is it about what is in it for us? When Christy and I came to this church, Christian Youth Fellowship, in 1996, we felt a call from God to come here. And it wasn't really about the music. It wasn't about the preaching. It wasn't really about anything. I didn't even read the belief statement. I mean, it could have been dodgy doctrine for all I know. It's just like, but we knew that God was calling us here. I'm not saying this to boast. I'm just trying to let us understand how perhaps some things have changed in recent times. So one of the first things we did was like, yeah, we're going to join this church. One of the second things we did was, how can we serve? Because if we knew God was calling us here, we knew he had a part for us to play in the church community to serve. So that was just the heart of our attitude. And I'm so thankful for my parents that taught us that. But now it's so different. We pick and choose churches. It's like, well, what is that children's program like? Or what is the preaching like? What is the music like? Does it meet my needs? Is it to my style? And everything has completely changed. I'm not saying it's wrong that we do that, but we've just got to check our heart and really ask the question, is God calling me here? Because no church is perfect. And that's why God calls us to churches, so that we can be a blessing. So, the pioneer spirit, the expander spirit, or the consumer spirit, which is always taking. It's all about us. It's all about me. It's all about meeting my needs, which is the motivational triad, which is the fallen nature. Jesus gives us new natures. The Holy Spirit comes and lives in us, and it completely changes everything. So practical tips. Number one. God created us to be pioneers and enlargers, expanders. He never created us as human beings to be consumers. Genesis 1:28, right at the beginning, the Lord blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and govern it, or be stewards of this earth. And again to Adam and Eve in Genesis 2:15, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to take care of it, never to just consume it. It's all about contributing. So God created us to be pioneers. The Great Commission has everything to do with pioneering and expanding. Number two, and Jesus came close to them. I love that. Jesus comes close and says, all the authority of the universe has been given to me. Now go. not go and consume, go into with my authority and make disciples of all nations. It's all about being a pioneer. It's all about being an expander. Number three, the parable of the talents has everything to do with pioneering and expanding. It's got some warnings about consuming actually in there. So Luke 19:11, the crowd was listening to everything Jesus said, and because he was nearing Jerusalem, he told them a story to correct the impression that the kingdom of God would begin right away. Again, in our culture, we just want things now and instant, and it's not like that. He said, a nobleman was called away to a distant empire to be crowned king and then return. Before he left, he called together 10 of his servants and divided them among them 10 pounds of silver, saying, invest this for me while I am gone. Other translations, engage in business. The King James says, occupy until I come, which is all sort of, you know, it's like a soldier, I guess, a warfare term. The parable of talents is always, it's all been about going and investing and engaging and producing. It's never been about consuming. It's all been about pioneering and settling, not consuming. Number four, pioneers and settlers need settlers, and settlers need pioneers. Pioneer, someone with a pioneer spirit, and we need them. They're just like, yeah, we're going to do this. And I know it's not been done before, but I believe it can be done. And they're so passionate, and they're so, I guess, aggressive in the right way about this vision. They've got faith, but they tend to just like doing things on their own and being loner. They're not very good at teamwork, unfortunately. So they need the ones that are called to be settlers or expanders. I think it absolutely goes hand in hand. We need settlers to know and value pioneers, and pioneers need to know and value settlers. Settlers, on the other hand, I guess this is where this word comes from, we can tend to settle down and just like, yep, this is going okay. Who needs to do anything about pioneering? We're just happy with our own little community, and that's great. Thomas Watson, a renowned US businessman, in last century said this, once an organization loses its spirit of pioneering, its progress stops. Once an organization, I guess you can put the word church in there, loses its spirit of pioneering, its progress stops. Pioneers need settlers. Settlers need pioneers. I'm still not sure who I am. I think I'm a little bit of both with that. But, you know, the SimCity video games, you guys remember those where you like you build a city? And I'm phenomenally good at those video games for about the first half hour, because I just like building and expanding and this is awesome, and it's like, yeah, but then with those SimCity games, you've got to put all the amenities in, else your whole everything just turns to custard. And within about half an hour, my city was just in ruins, because I'd forgotten to put like sewers in, I'd forgotten to put all these things in. It's just all about expanding, and it's just, and I think that's why we need to understand it's hand in hand. Pioneers need settlers, settlers need pioneers. Number five, consumers can receive a new identity. We can actually change. God can do something in our hearts from being a consumer to being a contributor. So I talked about Jacob earlier on, how his name literally meant ambitious deceiver. In another way, I guess he was just a consumer. So that's how he started life. He robbed his brother, deceived his father, then he ran away. And then because you reap what you do sow, and God has a way of allowing that to happen in our lives, he was living with his uncle who basically deceived him and did the same thing for him. And then to cut a long story short, he hears that Esau wants to meet with him again. This is his brother who he robbed of the inheritance blessing, and he is freaking out. He's like, I'm going to die. So he works this out. He splits his huge family and all his possessions up into two. But the night before he meets Esau, he wrestles with the man. And we know that it is God. God comes in the form of a man, and he wrestles with God until daybreak. So his life, God had blessed him. And he had an incredible, he had the vision of the stairway to heaven, or the ladder to heaven. So he knew God's blessing. He knew God's incredible encounters. But there was something in his identity which was always a consumer.
And I think he just got sick of it because he realized that it was just futile. It was emptiness in his heart. And he knew the man he was wrestling was God. And then he basically holds on to God. And it's a painful experience, but he says, God, I'm not going to let you go unless there is breakthrough in my life. I need breakthrough. I need a complete identity change. I need you to bless me. I need you to change my life. There are some things in my life and I don't like them. I've been living my whole life and I need a new identity. And God does that, which is an incredible story. In Bible times, names are incredibly significant and they show or describe a person's identity. So Jacob was called deceiver. That was his identity. And God changes his identity in that encounter when he's wrestling with God. Changes his name from Jacob to Israel, which is Prince of God or God Wrestler. And we know that he became a father of the nation of Israel. I think a father is another name for a pioneer. So Jacob's identity was completely changed. And I do think that is something that perhaps needs to happen in our heart, because I do think every single one of us has a bit of consumer in us. And we've just got to come to a place where we say to God, God, I need a breakthrough in my life. I understand the futility of searching after things that really just continue the emptiness in my life. I mean, let's face it, once you've binge-watched a whole series on Netflix, do we ever feel enlightened and blessed by God? No, it's just like, oh, it's a good series, but I've wasted how many hours of my life? You know, that's the sort of thing. So I think for all of us, God wants to change things in our lives, and he does that. He loves to renew a person, to make us from broken to whole. But sometimes it takes a wrestling with God. And then God changes our identity. And then a miracle happens in our life. And that is awesome. God loves doing that. But sometimes it's going to take a wrestling with God. And I want to talk to the millennials right now. And don't say, okay, boomer, because I'm not a baby boomer. I'm a Gen X, which is the very best generation that's ever lived. X is the Greek word for a symbol of Christ, so Gen X is the most godly generation. No, just kidding. But I'm, you know, millennials get a bad rep, those that are, what is it, in their 20s now, and Gen Zs, I think. But I love them because I just think there's so much potential in millennials and the younger generations these days. Out of all the generations that I know, they are the ones that are the most environmentally conscious. And they want change to happen, which is great. So they are the ones that I guess some of you guys are rebelling against this environmental consumerism that you see that's happening in the world. But I really challenge the younger generations, let's start to rebel against the consumer mentality that we're seeing in the church. And instead of just coming to critique of how good the music is or how good the cafe is or how good the fonts are on our advertising, let it be, how can I contribute to this? Said with a smile. Love you guys. So in conclusion, Mark 14:3-9, this has been incredibly challenging to me. Now Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of Simon, a man Jesus had healed of leprosy. And as he was reclining at the table, a woman came into the house holding an alabaster flask. It was filled with the highest quality of fragrant and expensive oil. She walked right up to Jesus, and with a gesture of extreme devotion, she broke the flask and poured out the precious oil over his head. But some were highly indignant when they saw this, and they complained to one another, saying, "What a total waste! It could have been sold for a great sum, and the money could have benefited the poor." So they scolded her harshly. Jesus said to them, "Leave her alone. Why are you so critical of this woman? She has honored me with this beautiful act of kindness, for you will always have the poor whom you can help whenever you want, but you will not always have me." When she poured the fragrant oil over me, she was preparing my body in advance for my burial. She has done all that she could to honor me. I promise you that this wonderful gospel spreads all over the world, the story of her lavish devotion to me will be mentioned in memory of her. An incredible story about how a woman came to Jesus. She didn't want or ask anything of him at all. She just came to bless him. She came to offer her best. There's a personal revelation to me about church. When we come to church, do we think about receiving or do we think about giving? When we come to church every Sunday or home groups, do we think about where is our heart positioned? Is it about giving or is it about receiving? Because for me, a lot of the time it's been about receiving. And you've heard me say this so often. It's like, God's here, and wherever God is, supernatural things happen, and we're two or more are gathered, and we can be expectant because God's going to move and God's going to do some amazing things in our lives. And he always does because that's the heart of God. But for me, it was like, when was the last time I came to church just to bless God? And just to give him my best, just like this woman with the alabaster duck. She didn't ask anything. She just came to bless him. She came to give. It was the complete opposite of the heart of a consumer. So what if we came to church each Sunday to give instead of receive? Just imagine that person who comes along and they're so excited about church because you get to worship God and you get to give God thanks in a larger group of people, where there's celebration and there's joy, and there's that person who just is so excited about Sunday morning because it's like, I get to worship God, I get to give him my best out of the Thanksgiving, and my life hasn't been the best this week, but it's not about how good or bad my life has been. I just want to bless Jesus with my offering of Thanksgiving today. I can't wait to worship him. So it's not about receiving, it's about giving. What about the person that comes and is so excited about bringing a gift of encouragement to others, because in a group this big of a couple hundred people, there's always going to be people that need encouraging. And instead of wanting to receive, you think, God, I'm here today, and the least I can do is just to encourage someone, just to smile, just to be that encouragement. And you come along to church, and you've just got that, you just need to look at people, and they're encouraged. And I just want to honor Meg and Rick Tillett this morning. They haven't been too long at this church, but they've just gotten stuck in, and they're on our greeting team. And you see them with the T-shirts, and they're just so encouraging, and they're so welcoming. I saw Rick this morning, and it wasn't his month on, but man, he was still so encouraging and still so joyful, and I got so encouraged. They're bringing an offering of encouragement to the church. And I know there's so many of you, but it's just so good. And it's so much of a blessing to so many people. Bringing the gift of service. And again, I came this morning, 8 o'clock, and there's already the band starting up. And none of them are paid for what they do. It's just all volunteerial. And all the tech team was there, and they were getting stuck in 8 o'clock, 8:30. That room out the back was full of people praying for the service this morning. And encouraging, and the ministry team have come and they're praying up so that they can be a blessing to others. And then the people come early for cafe, and then the car park guys come. And man, it was just a very humbling experience for me this morning. And I try and go around a lot of you guys often, but I want to say it on behalf of Christy and I and the church leadership. Thank you so much for being such a servant-hearted church. And I know our weeks are busy and stressful, and I get Mondays and I guess some of Tuesdays off. Tuesday's supposed to be Tuesday off. So I'm working today, but most of you guys, your weekend is your free time. You work from Monday to Friday, and yet you still voluntarily come and you want to serve the Lord and serve others. So thank you so much for what you do. It just really blesses our heart. Thank you for all of you guys. You make this church what it is, and we love our church. So instead of coming to receive, you guys come to give. What about bringing the gift of finance? Oh, here we go. Simon, I was enjoying your sermon up to now. Yeah, you're talking about money. When was the last time we actually thought, God, I want to bless you with the gift of finance into the house of God? It's giving, not receiving. What about the last time we gave ourselves as a gift? Saying, God, I haven't got a lot to offer, and I've got issues, but God, I want to give my life to you afresh. To be like that woman that gave everything. God, I just want to give myself to you. So when we come to church, do we think about giving or receiving? Consuming or contributing? So again, I apologize in advance. But when I dream of Renew Church, what do I dream about? I dream of this place being a place where people that are searching and they don't know Jesus yet. They're searching. They want to know. They can come and they can feel welcome and they can feel a part of what's going on. You are so welcome here. If you're listening to this, if you're here today and you are searching, we love you. We honor you. We welcome you. We want a place where people that are searching are a big part of what we're doing. What about people that are broken? Absolutely, you are so welcome. People that are broken and they've got issues and struggles, but you're in the best place for that because Jesus loves to heal brokenness. People that are struggling, absolutely, you are so welcome here. People that need encouragement, so welcome here. Families, parents with young kids, man, I know it's how much of a struggle it is just to get to church. And we don't ask anything of you, but just to come and just enjoy. We want to bless you. We want to welcome you so much. Disciples, you are so welcome in this place. Who is a disciple? Someone who is teachable, someone who is learning, someone who is being a blessing to others. You know, when you're little or when you have kids, they can't feed themselves. And they just make a mess when they do. So as a parent, you do the spoon with the airplane, and you get the spoon into the mouth, and it's just like what you do. Toddlers, babies can't feed themselves. You've got to feed them for themselves. But just imagine if I was at lunchtime today as a 45-year-old expecting Christy to feed me with a spoon and a high chair with a bib. That would just be weird, wouldn't it? And it's like, feed yourself, Simon, you know, because as an adult now, I've learned to feed myself through the process of being a toddler, and it's all messy, but you learn how to feed yourselves. I think that's an incredible picture of what a disciple is. We've learned to feed ourselves, and we feed those that can't yet feed themselves. So all of those groups of people that you are so welcome in Renew Church, from the brokenhearted to people that are searching to parents that are stressed out with their kids, all of that, disciples, absolutely. Consumers, people that have been going to church for a long time and they don't contribute to anything, they just consume and they just critique and they just criticize. Nah. Because I don't see that in the kingdom of heaven, I really don't. Said with a smile. But I want to say that out of love and out of a deep challenge that God has placed in my heart. Now, God's doing something in church communities. It's about relationships. It's about, you know, doing this thing called life together and being a blessing to others. And God never expected us and created us to do that alone. It was always in community. It's all in relationships. Even for us introverts, we understand we've got to have relationships. But we also got to understand that God has created us to be pioneers and settlers, never consumers. And so we've got to be people that understand that and really battle and say, God, please give me an identity change in my own heart. I don't want this consumer attitude anymore. I want to be a contributor. I want to be a blessing to others, not just in here, but to this world outside. Is that okay? So in conclusion, Hebrews 12, 1 to 2. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, and Paul is sort of giving us a mental picture of like an Olympic stadium with all of these people in the grandstands, and when you read it in context, it's all of those people that have gone before us, all those incredible men and women of God that have been the pioneers, that have been the expanders, and they're there, they've run their race, they've taken their seat in the great grandstand of heaven now, and they're cheering us on, but they have blazed a trail for us. They have widened the trail for us. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. A pioneer is someone who's gone where no man has gone before, to pave the way, to blaze the trail for future people to follow. And that's how Jesus. He's called the great pioneer. Why? Because all of mankind has stuffed up. We have sinned. We've fallen short of God's glorious presence. We understand that. We've inherited this fallen nature, the motivational triad, from Adam and Eve. And we've got that in our DNA. And no matter what we do, we just end up going towards that. And we have behavior. We do things that not only hurt God, but it hurts others and it hurts ourselves. And there's no way for us to return to God, to have that relationship back. But God desperately wanted us to have relationship because he is a God of relationship. There's only one way that relationship could ever be restored. Is if someone who was all God and someone who was all man came and paid the price to reconcile man back to God. And that's why Jesus is our pioneer. He did that for us. He made a way possible for us back to the Father so that we could have an incredible life now. Absolutely ups and downs, bad days and good days, but we know that God's got a plan and purpose for us in this lifetime to bless others. And then when we all pass away, when we all die, and all of us will, that we have heaven to look forward to, paradise with our Father forever and ever. And that is going to be awesome. Eternal life. Complete unity with God. No more separation. But that sin in our life brings separation. That's why Jesus had to come. He had to die on the cross. He had to pay the price for you and for me so that we could say yes to God. The people say, well, if Jesus has already done it, you know, I don't have to do anything. And really, we don't, but we've still got to receive that gift of forgiveness. And Christmas is coming up, and I know I've said this many times before, but I think it's an incredible picture of how we receive salvation. It's like getting, say for me, giving Christy a Christmas present, and it's got her name on it, and I've spent some ridiculous amount of money to bless her, right? So there's something in the... If she doesn't receive that, she never gets to be blessed by what's in the Christmas present. It can have her name on it, and I could have forked out all that huge amount of money, but if it's just left there, if she doesn't receive it, then she is never, ever going to receive what has been paid for. What she needs to do is receive that, which is just, thank you. Make it her own and be blessed. Jesus has paid the price for you and for me. And he's offering salvation to us all. And all we have to do is say, yes, Jesus, I receive that. I want you in my life. I know I've stuffed up, but I need forgiveness. I need a fresh start. I want to receive you. It's just a yes.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope it was an encouragement to you. To contact us or to find out what's happening at our church, please check out our website, renewchurch.nz.